Next on the Capital Connection, SUNY Chancellor Jim Malatras will talk about how the SUNY system is coming along. Is it affordable? What happens if they get the dreaded virus? What is SUNY doing about that? That's SUNY Chancellor Jim Malatras next on the Capital Connection.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and we are so pleased to have him, is newly appointed SUNY Chancellor, Dr. Jim Malatras. Dr. Malatras is the 14th Chancellor of the State University of New York and the first SUNY graduate to lead SUNY. Welcome, Chancellor. Great to have you here.
It's so nice to be with you, Dr. Chartok. How's everything?
That's all right. You could call me Alan. You know, I don't stand on ceremony. When I taught at SUNY for 40 years, well, you know, somebody might want to call me doctor. But in your case, you deserve it, and you worked hard for it. And by the way, what did you write your doctorate on?
I wrote my doctorate on social movement theory, collective legal consciousness and social movement theory, which I found fascinating. I looked at Indian Point nuclear facility and several small social movements in the mid-Hudson Valley.
And do you think you added to the collective knowledge that we need to have in this field?
Well, my mother think I did. I don't know if the field does, but my mother definitely did.
Yeah, well, I have
many books. That's a lie, Alan. My mother didn't read it either.
But she has it, I'll bet, on her shelf.
That's right.
Because in the Chartok family, both Chartok twins have one, their mother had one, their wives have one, and we all work very hard. It is probably the toughest time of our lives, right, when you're working on those things?
It's a really difficult thing to write a complete book like that after many years of research and digging into the issue, for sure. But it was a wonderful experience. I really enjoyed writing my dissertation.
Well, by the way, I really didn't. So, Jim Malatras, let's go to the meat of it. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because a lot of people don't know you yet. You've worked closely with the governor in several different ways, but perhaps you should tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, thanks, Alan. I've been in New York State for many years. I was born in New Jersey, but I don't tell many people about that. But I grew up in the Ellenville area in Ulster County, New York. I'm a proud Ulster County native. I went to Ellenville High School, and then I am the first SUNY graduate ever to become chancellor. So I went through the SUNY system. I started at SUNY Potsdam, thinking I would be a wonderful music major, and then realizing I may have been very talented in my small town, but not so talented in a great institution like that. And I became a political scientist at the University of Albany. And then I've been in academics on some level or in government for more than 20 years. I started working for some small environmental not-for-profits, and then I moved to the legislature where I worked for a gentleman you know, Richard Brodsky, who passed recently and who was just a wonderful figure in my life, a pugnacious, dedicated public servant, and I basically cut my policy teeth with him in the legislature for 7 years. And then I moved to working with Governor Cuomo when he was Attorney General. I worked for him for 3.5 years there, and then on his campaign for governor, and then as a policy director, and then director of state operations, where I did things like help construct the state of the state address and the policy that goes along with that, respond to crisis and emergencies for many years. And then most recently, I've served on the governor's state task force on the COVID response. So I couldn't have asked for two better figures to sort of learn about government and policy and how public service should be than Governor Cuomo and Richard Brodsky. I still teach a lot, too. I teach at the University of Albany every once in a while. I teach for Empire State College. I've taught at Hudson Valley. So I really enjoy teaching still, too.
That's great. Okay, so, you know, this is a long way around question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you remember when Brodsky was running for attorney general?
I do. I do remember when he was running for attorney general.
Were you in the room the day that we had the attorney general debate and that he was there?
I may not have been in the room for that, but I'm sure there's a fun story coming from that experience.
There is, because... And this gets to your music major, because there was a piano up on the stage. There were six candidates, I think, something like that. Without being asked, your buddy got up and walked to the piano and started to play in front of that whole big audience.
Yeah, that is quintessential Richard Brodsky.
The question, of course, is, what was your instrument if you were a music major?
I enjoyed singing, vocal, and I played woodwinds throughout high school and others. So I played the tenor, alto, soprano, saxophones, which I really enjoyed. And now I'm an amateur guitar player because, you know, I had to get my wife somehow.
Oh, and she was a folky?
My wife is a psychologist by training, but we are high school sweethearts, Alan. We've been together for a little over 20 years now. We've been married for about 15 years.
Call me when you get to 50, as we just did, and then I'll give you the honor you deserve. Okay, so there are some guys with long gray beards and bushy eyebrows who are saying, wait, you know, you have to have an academic, somebody to be the head of the SUNY system, who is a professor somewhere and then moved up to be the head of a college and then gets to be the chancellor. What do you say to them?
About myself, I would say this. That's the beauty of higher education and academics. That's what makes us. We have lots of different opinions and thoughts, and that's what drives the discourse forward. I think that the board, in their wisdom, said we may need a new approach, especially in the time of COVID crisis and where we stand in higher education nationally, right? The trends and landscape of higher education have been changing for a long time. And, you know, I think someone like me, which has a broad experience in public policy and government, plus in academics, right? I was a college president. I did work on higher education policy. I worked for the former chancellor as her chief of staff and vice chancellor for policy, has a different background and a skill set. And the other thing is, I understand SUNY. I am SUNY, which is the first time anybody sitting in this chair has ever been from SUNY, which I am damn proud of, to be honest with you, that a SUNY student could elevate themselves, right? I came from a working class family, a nurse and nurses, and, you know, we didn't have tons of money, and we had to fight and scrape for everything we had, and I had the opportunity to have economic and social mobility because of SUNY, because I could afford to go to a public institution as big and robust as SUNY. So I'm proud that someone like me made it to the chancellorship, because I hope I can be someone that other students all across the system can look up to and say, look, if we go to SUNY, we can be like Jim too.
Don't get me wrong. I'm all for it. You know, I honestly believe that the fact that you're there for a good reason and a bad reason. The good reason is obviously you've had a ton of experience and you know what you're doing. The bad reason is, maybe it's not so bad, is that you are a very good friend of the governor's, obviously. You've worked hard, you've worked with him. And if SUNY needs anything right now, it needs to be close to the governor. So I love that idea. It's not a political appointment in that way, but it can't be bad for them. It can only be good for them. What do you say to that?
I think in this environment, you have to build a relationship with everybody. I think the governor has done a lot for the state. He's an innovator. I don't run from my friendship or my work with the governor. I respect him tremendously. And we're a public institution, by the way. We are the State University of New York. Just like I have long relationships in the legislature, it's important to have relationships with folks in the legislature. They're the ones, by the way, that vote on our budget. That's important to me, as well as labor unions and other things. I mean, Alan, I love to talk about working with labor, which has not always been easy here with certain folks at the State University of New York. But to me, it's really important. They are the backbone of our workforce. They're our faculty and our professional staff and our support staff and our service staff. And this, something like COVID and other things, we're all in this together. So I have reached out with open arms to our faculty, to our professional staff and others, and I've so far developed a nice relationship. I don't think we should run from those things. I think we should run into those things, especially in a time of crisis and especially in a time of change like we're facing in higher education. So I don't run from those things, but I think I've always worked with integrity and trying to do the right thing for the place I work, and I'm going to fight like hell for SUNY every day, and I'm going to use every tool I can to help the State University of New York system. And that means governors or legislatures or labor unions or anybody else, I'm going to do it.
So Jim Mellitus, recently a professor, I believe at NYU, put out a report in which he said that several private or independent colleges were in danger of closing because of their finances, which, of course, if that happened, would leave SUNY and CUNY, the City University of New York, as the major places because it's the one place that a New York kid could go. Do you have any comment? Did you read that story, and what did you think?
So the NYU study is recent, but go back to 2015. The Atlantic wrote a piece saying by 2025, nearly one-third of all small liberal arts colleges across the country could close. It's been changing for years. Now more than ever, our workforce needs more education, not less education. One of the primary challenges we have, though, are cost, which at SUNY I'm proud of because it's $7,500 for tuition. We are one of the lowest cost institutions across the nation, and that's good because we're still high quality. The second piece is demonstrating value. I read this poll, Alan, 2016 after the presidential election, and it struck me. It said half of the country didn't believe in the value of higher education any longer. The half that said they don't believe in it were the half that actually need more education. The manufacturing sector has changed. Their work has been changing. It's more informational sector. They need education and credentialing. They don't think it's worth it. We have to reach out to the broad cross-section of our state and say, there's value for you here. There's a reason for you to come to a SUNY institution or a CUNY institution. There's jobs at the end of this. There's opportunity for you. There's low cost where you're not going to come out with a lot of student loans. On some level, this change has been happening a long time. NYU is just sort of a capstone to this, maybe, but the Atlantic's written about it. Higher Education Reports after Higher Education Report has written about this. We have to change a little bit to demonstrate our value and its success, and I think we could do it. The scary thing to me, Alan, is 50,000 students right now in New York State opt to go to an online college outside of New York. 50,000. You know what that would mean for enrollment at a SUNY or CUNY if we got 50,000 of our students back right here in New York? I think that would be a sea change, but we have to reach out to them and say, look what you can get. You can go to a university, a center at Stony Brook, and get a STEM education like nobody else. I would put Stony Brook's STEM education up against any private institution, and I think there's a lot of great private institutions out there, but Stony Brook is the best. You want a public policy education? Go to the University of Albany. Second to none, not just because I got my PhD from there and I'm selling my own PhD, but just look at the rankings. Affordable quality education. You want to go to practice the arts and perform the arts? SUNY Purchase is for you. And you don't have to spend $50,000 a year on tuition. You can spend $75,000. So we have to do the outreach. We have to say to people, hey, there's value in higher education, and let's get those people back.
So wait a second now. How do you figure? I went to Hunter. It was absolutely free. I'm that old. It was free. We didn't pay a dime. And the books were free, believe it or not, at the time. They changed that, but that's what it was. There are people in New York who can't afford a dime. They can't. If you said to a lot of the people who went to Hunter when I was there, $500, Jim Mellitus, is impossible for me. I can't pay $500, let alone, you know, $20,000. Isn't there an argument to be made that a college like grade school and high school ought to be free?
Well, here's where we are. I don't control the purse strings, but TAP is a $1 billion-a-year program, tuition assistance program, which lets hundreds of thousands of people get basically free tuition. Excelsior expanded that. The governor's Excelsior free tuition college program expanded that. I think there's other targeted programs that we have to focus on, too, to give those students who don't even think they have a chance, like our opportunity programs that the famous world-renowned legislator from Buffalo, Arthur Eve, helped create 50 years ago here, the Educational Opportunity Program and the Educational Opportunity Centers, to provide broad access. We do a lot on affordability in New York State, and we're proud of that here, and we should be proud of that. Most of the students, I think it's something like, I haven't looked at the, you're asking me a fact I don't quite have, it's something like 50% of all students who come and graduate from a SUNY graduate without any student loan debt. 50%. And the others are so low, it's much lower than the statewide average. That's something to be proud of. Could you do more? Probably, but there are fiscal considerations, of course. But, Alan, I am that product. I would not have been able to go to college if the tuition wasn't so low as a student. So I think we still have among the most affordable. I think it's something to be proud of. That's why it's important to me to fight for those programs. The opportunity programs are really important to me. I'm going to fight for those programs. The tuition assistance program and the Excelsior program, all those tools in the toolbox to make it affordable for students, I'm going to be standing in lockstep with them to make sure that they continue to have those opportunities like I had.
Jim Allotras is the SUNY Chancellor. Jim, you've taken over the State University amid the COVID-19 pandemic, and, you know, you're managing the issue for SUNY. Now, you've been calling for a three-pronged approach, testing, tracking, and uniform protocols for enforcement. How's it going?
You know, every day is a day you have to monitor aggressively the situation, because as you've seen across the country, and as you've seen at one of our campuses in SUNY Oneonta, a little fire, an amber of a fire, could turn into a major blaze in a split second. And that is instructive and informative to people. SUNY Oneonta, when I got the call for SUNY Oneonta, I wasn't officially chancellor yet, Alan. I knew the way that was going was going to be bigger. In 2 weeks, it was nearly 700 cases. That's how fast it can spread and grow unmitigated. So I think the three-prong approach that we came up with, now that I've come here, I think we have required every campus to test. We luckily can do that because of SUNY Upstate. So it's really three things. Testing, we now require every one of our campuses to test on a regular basis, repeated regular surveillance testing, so we can see if there's a problem emerging on one of our campuses. Luckily, we can do it because SUNY Upstate can now do up to 120,000 tests a week, that at a really pretty affordable cost. So that is something that we are really proud that was created at SUNY, and now we can do more testing. So we can manage and see what's going on our campuses. The second piece is transparency. We have a data dashboard. All 64 of our campuses have to report every 24 hours. How many cases do they have? How many tests did they do? How many people are in isolation or quarantine? Were there anybody hospitalized? That is actually something, Alan, that students, when I started going around the state, were demanding, and faculty were demanding. They just want to know what's going on their campus. And I agree with them. They're adults. They're paying to come here. They should know exactly what's going on. I think that transparency has given a lot of people confidence that we can manage a situation as large as the State University of New York system, and we can keep our campuses open safely. And the data dashboard is telling a great story right now. Our total percent positive since the beginning of the semester for our campus administered tests are 0.7%. That's really low. That's under 1%. And over the last 10 days, it's 0.3%. We performed more than 106,000 tests since the start of the semester. We're going to keep doing more, but I'm proud of that. The third piece, right, so now the campuses themselves, our presidents and administrations have to do more testing and have to do more transparency. But we also think the students have to have some skin in the game too as well. What we're finding is a vast majority of our students are complying. This is a different time, and they're happy to come back to our campuses, but we can't do this like I was when I was a college kid as a freshman. You have to take extra precautions. Unfortunately, some parties have created outbreak situations on our campus. SUNY Oswego was one of those, by the way. They pre-tested everyone, and yet they still had an outbreak because of parties. We put in a uniform policy for all of our campuses to say, if you can't follow the pledge that you signed, the code of conduct that you've agreed to as an adult when you came to our universities this semester, there's going to be severe penalties for you, including suspension. So don't mess it up for everyone, because it takes individual responsibility for the collective good. And Alan, every student I've been talking to, they want us to do more on that front, because most of them are happy to be back and they want to see their college experience ruined for everybody. So I think those three things has helped manage our situation at SUNY well. I think you can now see that our numbers are stabilized and coming down. I think our campuses of mostly, we have 64 campuses, have remained open. And we hope that if we can get through the fall semester, things are looking even brighter in the spring and in the future. It will give confidence to the entire state, our students, our faculty, our parents who send their students, that we've got this under control.
So have you thrown anybody out, or have you suspended anybody? Have you followed up on what you're saying should be done?
Yes. Yes. And so many of our college presidents have taken those efforts. I give, for instance, big kudos to a new, relatively new president in Fredonia. He was on the job for 3 weeks, and he suspended several students for parties. There was another a president, relatively new, in SUNY Plattsburgh. He suspended 43 freshmen in the first week. He said, we mean business here. We have to do this the right way. We can't let these parties get out of control. And the proof is playing out. At SUNY Plattsburgh, they've been doing regular testing every week, zero cases. There hasn't been a problem there. So I think you're seeing that in areas. And Alan, as chancellor, I'm going to support our presidents and our campus communities every time they do something like that, because you have to be on top of this, because you can see how quickly it changes in the state.
So assuming that you find somebody tomorrow in one of the colleges who has it, what do you do?
So right now, if you are positive for the virus, you have to follow state rules, which is you have to isolate. It becomes a public health order. You have to isolate for the 14 days. We require testing to make sure that they eventually become negative. We do provide services for them, so they're having, they're not suffering. I mean, it's a tough situation, right? There's a lot of isolation. There could be loneliness. We're worried about the mental health components of this as well. So our campuses provide a lot of student services in these situations. But it becomes like anyone else in the state of New York who is positive for the virus. You have to isolate. You have to wait the required amount of time. And then hopefully everything's fine after that and doesn't take off from there.
So how about the way in which we're teaching? You know, all those years I taught at New Paltz and loved it so much and spoke to maybe 100, 200 students, sometimes much less. And now there are people who are teaching from home. How are you working all that hybrid stuff out?
In March, it was a disruptive force because it had to happen so quickly. And I've heard from faculty and others who said, hey, this didn't go as well as we thought it should have gone. I hear everybody. But at the same time, it was a really dramatic change because we had to take dramatic action given the severity of the crisis. I do think now where we are, we have to learn from our lessons and maximize the opportunities for our students. I think of all the positive things, and many of the faculty I've talked to say, hey, listen, a lot of our activities belong in the classroom, but why not do some more hybrid learning to give opportunities for students who may not have the chance to sit in the classroom and do more? And, you know, I think that is a potential for us. By the way, that sort of hybrid learning is becoming more of a thing that students want. I mentioned 50,000 students going to online programs outside New York State of New York State residents right now, right? So there's clearly a demand for it. I think how you do it is everything. It has to be high quality. There has to be training. The pedagogy behind it has to be right. We do those things well. Now, I've come from being a president of a school that taught a lot online. Empire State College teaches a lot of online courses. By the way, Alan, I'm teaching this semester, even as chancellor, I'm teaching a course this semester. It was supposed to be in person, but out of an abundance of caution, we're doing it online, and it's going pretty well. It doesn't
What's the course?
For labs and all the things. The course is on federalism. I call it Trump's effect on New York State policy. That gets students in because it talks about modern issues, but it's really about federalism. So you get to read all about the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, other things. I love it.
That's terrific. What about who's doing the teaching? I know that the question is, are we losing full-time faculty to part-time faculty?
Well, listen, this challenge, and this has been a challenge even before COVID came, I think there's always a balance of getting expertise in a classroom, right? In many levels, I'm a volunteer faculty member. I volunteer my time, so I'm considered basically an adjunct. I think there's a role for people because they have certain expertise. What I tried to do when I was at Empire State College, and I think what you're trying to do is you want as many permanent full-time faculty teaching in the classroom because they have the expertise, the knowledge, the research capabilities, they can bring in external funding. That's really the balance that you're trying to get, even in difficult financial times, I think, getting those folks in. But I do think there's a value for a broad cross-section of people who come into the classroom who may not be a full-time faculty member, but they can offer something because of their experience or their background that I think benefits the college community. I think it's a balance that you have to work through. And I don't think you can look at it in the financial economics. It is in what's the right academic thing for the students in the classroom.
So are we doing enough to pay those people, you know, the auxiliary faculty?
I will say this, Alan. In public service, in higher education, no one gets paid enough. And that's the truth. No one in this business gets paid enough for what they do. But in many cases, people do this because they believe in the mission. They believe in serving students. They believe in, you know, we have many healthcare workers. We have hospitals in our system. They fought every day on the front lines. They deserve more. So do people get paid most, get paid what they're supposed to get paid or deserve to get paid? No, in this society. Are we constantly working through those issues to make it a little more equitable and just? We do. I think the state of New York is focused on that. I think the SUNY system's focused on that. But on some level, they're not doing it just for that reason. They're doing it because they believe in the mission of public education or public policy or public health. And that, at least you can support them and applaud them and do other things to help lift them up.
We're almost out of time, Jim Malatras, Chancellor. I wanted to ask you really quickly, are we going to make sure that the kids at the SUNY campuses get an opportunity to vote in this presidential election?
Yes. I mean, right now, that is something that many of our campuses are doing many public awareness campaigns on. Exercising your basic, most important function in a democracy is having your voice heard in an election. Same as it was, by the way, Alan, with the census. I mean, I was on the state's, I was a co-chair for the state census commission, and the federal government threw a lot of roadblocks up at us this year. And yeah. Talk about importance for getting funded. If you're not counted as a resident of a state, you're losing out on billions of dollars of federal funding. So the census and the election are two big pieces, and by the way, that our students are rallying around. Those are really fundamental, important things that we've been doing a lot of work to get people to come out and vote and participate in the census.
Well, Jim Malatras, I have to say this to you. First of all, thank you for spending all this time with us, but it isn't nearly enough. I had another 50 questions I wanted to ask you. That'd be a lot. So you've got to say before I let you go that you'll come back. Is that true?
I will come back as long as you'll have me.
Okay. So Jim Malatras is the chancellor of the SUNY, and we are delighted that you've spent this time with us. I'm pretty impressed with your answers, I'll tell you that much. So thank you so much for being with us, Jim, and we'll hope to see you again real soon.
Thanks so much, Alan.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.